Okay, hello everyone. My name is Danny Michael, and I am the Assistant Director of Career Development in the Financial Mathematics Program at the University of Chicago. It's my pleasure to welcome all of you to our panel on careers in quantitative finance. Before we begin, I would like to go over a few housekeeping notes. First, on your screens, you can see the schedule. So you can see the schedule for today's event. Please take a moment to familiarize yourself with the schedule of the afternoon sessions. Please join us from 12 to 12:50 p.m. for our keynote conversation with Provost Kai-Yi Li. The conversation will be moderated by Vice Provosts and Faculty Co-Directors of UChicago Grad. And those are Daniel Ababa and Jason Merchant. Links to join the Zoom sessions for the keynote and the afternoon panels can be found on GraduCon 2020 website. Now, if you look at the bottom of your screens, you will see a Q&A box and a chat box. You can use the chat box to inform staff of any technical issues that you are facing. If you have a question for the panel, please type it into the Q&A box. These questions will be visible to all attendees, so you can upvote questions that you like by clicking on the thumbs up icon next to the question. We can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so and now I would like to introduce our panelists. Today we have Patrick Gerstner, the AVP Quantitative Analyst at Bank of America. We have Andy Tang, Quantitative Analyst at William Blair. Trillium Jiang, CEO and co-founder of WealthBlock.ai. We also have Wansu Zhan, quantitative researcher at Chicago Trading Company. Our panel will be moderated by Mark Hendricks, the Associate Director of the Financial Mathematics Program and Program Faculty. And now, before I turn it over to Mark, we are going to ask the audience to fill out a brief poll just to help us get a sense of who's in attendance. Okay, so the poll results are in. It looks like we have 73% of attendees in master's programs. We have 23% in PhD programs, 2% postdoc, 2% alumni, and then 2% other. And then it looks like most of our audience comes from the physical sciences division, 52%. And the next category is 11% from, no, apologies, 14% from Graham, and then 11% from Harris. And then also 11% from social sciences. And now, with no further ado, I would like to turn it over to our moderator, Mark. much.
Thank you, Danny, and thank you, UChicago grad. It's a pleasure to be here again this year at the panel, and I'm delighted that everybody was able to bring this together, even with the coronavirus restrictions here. So thanks to you and the organizers, to all of our panelists, and obviously to all of you attending. I'm very pleased to see the mix that we have from various places across the university. As you all know, the purpose of this panel is to talk a little bit about careers in the financial industry, particularly from the viewpoint of those considering whether to go into these careers. So we're going to spend some time talking to our panelists about the jobs that they're currently in, about the career paths that they have experienced and that they can comment on going forward, as well as the educational backgrounds and ways that they broke into the industry. So we're excited to hear from all of them on these topics. We will have a Q&A. So for those of you that have questions, please fire away in the chat box. And when we hit that point in the meeting, we'll make good use of those questions that you submit. So we're very excited to discuss your questions. So please keep those coming throughout the meeting. Well, let's jump right into it. So the best way to, I think, start is to have a little more context from each of our panelists to understand where they're at and what they're doing. So ask each of you, starting with Wansu, to tell us briefly a little bit about what is your current job in the big picture. What's your role at the firm? What is it that, what's your role on your specific team? And how is your time spent? Is your job, you know, largely spent on a lot of programming? Is it a lot of client-facing work? Is it a lot of managerial work? So give us a couple of minutes, each of you, on helping the audience understand what your role is. Wansu, take it away.
Yeah, sure. So I work as a desk quant right now at CDC. When I started, I've swirled to a lot of different desks here. I've been to the index commodities rates desk, and I've also been to a team that's focusing on gathering data and developing research platform for the next generation of quant research last year. But now I'm back to indexes as a desk quant here. And as a desk quant at CTC, we do a range of things here. For example, we mainly work with traders on projects to improve our models of pricing and market making, or improve our strategies. We work with traders to calibrate parameters for our current model, make sure those parameters make sense. We backtest and implement an idea or a model. But we also support some quant tools we develop for the traders. In terms of the time spent, I would say we don't spend much on meeting or managing stuff, probably like 10 to 20%. The majority of my time is spent either talking to traders on project or just working on the data and do coding stuff. So I would say majority of my time spent on working on data and doing research.
Thank you very much. Andy, let's go to you.
So for me right now, I'm at Blair, and can you guys hear me clear? Yeah. So my current role is quant analyst for a systematic strategy team. So for what we do is a very typical, let's say, factor investing. The theory is more like, in terms of details of work, lots of modeling and data crunching. In terms of the, components of those modeling, we have alpha models to select the stocks, right? Risk models to, for the portfolio construction, and also risk monitoring, and also some attribution kind of work. In terms of the other work I'm doing, sometimes helping the fundamental side to incorporate some of the new technology into their fundamental research process, and even to train the internal people to adapt to some of the new technology. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Thank you very much. Trillium, how about you?
So I'm the CEO, co-founder of Wealthbox, a financial technology firm. So obviously I'm the entrepreneur here. Before this, I spent past 6 years working for the financial regulator, National Futures Association, as a lead quant. Then after that, 2 years in, then in my current role as the CEO. So that's pretty much a big shift. As to what I do then, essentially on managerial level, on the strategic level, determine the direction and overall strategy, market positioning, hiring, firing, and performance evaluation, etc. And spend most of the time essentially meeting and collaborating right now, or coordinating, I would say, and to a less degree, managing mostly through system design, and both in mechanical system and the strategic directions, as well as human system, to ensure that the enterprise itself can grow. And much less time, pretty much virtually no time on the actual data itself, other than coming out with model projections for the investors or for a certain kind of strategy payouts. So that's that.
Thank you. It's great to have such diversity among the panelists in terms of what your functions are, to give us a better sense of the breadth of the roles in the financial industry. Hopefully, for all of our audience members, one of the takeaways today is the enormous variation in careers in finance. Juan, so I want to go back to you and ask if you could tell us a little bit more about the difference between quant research at a bank versus quant research at a proprietary trading firm like CTC, where you are now. And maybe you could contrast that with a hedge fund as well. I think one of the intimidating things for newcomers is understanding what the difference is when they see job roles posted like quant research at such different types of firms, banks, prop trading firms, and hedge funds. Could you speak a little to that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. But actually, I think I've also run into this question a lot, but I think in terms of the type of quant research, it depends probably more on which team you are in versus like what type of companies, like whether it's bank or proprietary trading or hedge fund. So I think the type of quant research can be broadly classified into, for example, three categories: trading, risk, or some other alternative research. Some banks, hedge funds, or even proprietary trading firms may even cover all of these areas. Like for trading is more focusing on developing trading strategies, backtests, or implementing these strategies. It also mean like make sure to calibrate the parameters of your model well as well. And in terms of the products of trading, it can be further divided into like underlying trading, futures, options, or alternative products. In terms of areas, they are indexes, commodities, rates, etc. And another way to categorize is that whether you are market taking or market making, like CTC is mainly a market making firm, which provides liquidity to the market. And if you are a market taker, on the other hand, you will take liquidity from the market. So depends on which categories your team fall into, the type of research will be different in terms of the product, in terms of whether you are market making or market taking, for example. And for risk, of course, if you are trading, you need to understand the risk of your portfolio, but some teams make mainly more focusing on just pure risk. For example, for some banks, there are a lot of business components in some large banks that serve as a clearing firm. So for those teams, it needs to understand the risk of their client's portfolio. So the quant research there, focusing more on develop a lot of risk models, stress tests for different scenarios, and make sure it's charging enough margins for the client's portfolio. And for some alternative research, for example, one example is that some banks could have its credit card business department and it needs quants to build models for customers' credit profile, who is more likely to default. So that's also another type of quant research. So again, in short, I think it depends more in terms of which team you're in for example, a person working at CTC who is a option making firm versus a person works at a market making desk of a bank. Although one is at a proprietary trading firm and one is at a bank, their quant research type could be more similar compared to two other people working at the same bank, but one is at the credit card department, one is at their trading desk. So I think that's my perspective, but I would also encourage students to speak to people who are working at banks or working at hedge funds to get more perspective.
That was really helpful. Thanks. Andy or Trillium, anything to add to that?
That's a great summary of the quant work, in the financial industry. So I totally agree. If we think about the work we do, no matter which firm you are, it's related to the products that you're working on, right? And also the horizon. Some for the trading side or for most of the hedge funds, especially on the state arbitrage side, they are more like a short-term focused. And for us, maybe it's like more than medium and long-term focused. And also, relates to what kind of clients you are serving and where is your capital and what kind of service you are providing, right? Everything linked to the horizon product and also the work. The underlying methodology may be quite similar. Let's say those statistical models or those platforms is quite similar. Regarding to the product itself, options, futures, all those kind of have different characteristics, right? Just different rules, but the concept will be the same, yeah.
Pardon, that's really helpful. Thank you. Trillium, anything to add to that?
I think
especially given your background in working at a regulator, I know that's probably a substantially different experience. Any comments?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think I would abstract the idea of this concept of quant into essentially those are a set of tools and the skill sets that they have, then and the way of thinking, approaching problems. At the end of the day, for each organization, there are value drivers. And it really depends on each organization's what are those value drivers. And then you simply bring the tools and experience, what have you, to help them deliver value, and whatever that entails. Regulator, we don't have revenue per se. That we care more about how do we perform market regulation more efficiently is at the bottom line for my department, market regulation, because we're regulating a $3 billion a day financial derivative market. We don't really see people face to face. All we have is data, millions of lines of data that we need to go through. So once that's defined as a value driver, then deliver, whatever that means. So I went there essentially. Department was kind of transitioning. They had no idea what a quant could do. They just felt that they need someone who they can put on resume and then say that, oh, look pretty. We got someone with a good background who understands numbers and how to price a derivative. That was immediately after the crisis. Then the CFTC has a newfound rules, power, ruling over the finished derivative market. And the regulators at that moment didn't really understand how the math works, et cetera. So I pretty much went in there to write my own job description. So that essentially is starting by asking a fundamental question of what is needed? What is the desirable outcome? And based on my skills and what should be my value proposition to the entire organization. So you take that mindset and you can apply that pretty much anywhere, like a hedge fund. So you go to a hedge fund, you ask the fundamental question of, how do you make money? What's your value driver? And is that short-term trading, long-term investment? Then your skill set will be used differently. And for banks, are you front office, mid office, back office? They're all. Are you risk? Are you predictive analytics? Are you internal consulting? So the same skill can be applied very differently. So right now, very fast moving forward, I'm running my own company. So very often I no longer kind of just easily say that I don't have a model to trade per se, but I have to use a similar skill sets that I know how to make a different kind of use. For instance, what's my marketing model? What's my pricing model? What's my market positioning? Who was my competitive, who are my competitors? If their pricing dropped by 20%, what kind of impact would that have on me? Where do I find the benchmark to actually build that initial hypothesis of the model? So as you can see that none of that was really trained literally for when I was in school, because our program is quantitative finance. But now by learning, by having learned that approach, that mentality, now I'm no longer just any other businessman. I simply say, okay, I need to come up with a framework first in order for me to make a more rational decision and to refine that framework, aka the model, over time as I get more input from reality. So the very notion of that iterative, task-based approach is more of a kind of a, that's what I derive the most from the program and my career so far.
Thank you very much for that. Wansu, why don't you cap off that discussion? And then we're pleased to be joined by Patrick. I'm going to have him introduce himself. But Wansu, why don't you kind of finish us off on that topic first?
Yeah, I just have one more thing to add. Like Andy or Tristan mentioned, I forgot to mention one thing. I think one key difference is that if you work at a bank or a hedge fund, it's more client-based, so they have outside clients. While if you are working at a proprietary trading firm, there's no outside client. So if you work in a bank or a hedge fund, you may need to handle a lot of clients. Like you may find your work is have a lot of requests from the client. While if you are working at a proprietary trading firm, the type of work is mainly just purely developing strategies to make money based on your own risk tolerance. So I think that's one difference as well. That's just one more thing I want to add.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for that. Let's pause and have Patrick introduce himself. Patrick, we would love to hear just a couple of minutes from you on what you do, what your team's role is, what your role is on that team, to give us a little bit of context for you know, all of the rest of the discussion.
Yeah, sure. Sorry I'm late. So I work in the global risk organization department of Bank of America. So specifically, I work in the model standards team. So we set the model standards and perform oversight functions for the risk organization specifically. Of the total model population, risk owns about half the models, more or less. So it's mostly a control function, but we definitely get a lot of chances to use some quantitative methods, and having a background as a quant has helped me a lot. You know, just we do a lot of reading white papers, giving feedback on modeling methodology, you know, model process. You know, we define the entire model life cycle for the risk organization. So we do a lot of collaborating with modelers, project managers, senior management. And, you know, we run the full gamut of different products, everything from consumer products to wholesale to, you know, some more exotic alternative models. So we really, you know, It is a control function, like I said, but it's a good chance to, you know, see different areas of the bank and the risk organization, and you know how some of those products fit together. You know, and we really cover a large percentage of the balance sheet. So a big organization like Bank of America, you know, 150,000 employees, some odd, can really, you know, there's a lot of diversity and experience and job functions, so it's we see a lot of different stuff.
Great, very useful to have that perspective as we continue. At the end of the session, we're going to focus exclusively on audience questions, but I'd like to take a chance as we go to discuss a couple that have come in on this topic of kind of different job functions within the quant industry. Some very pertinent questions. Let's start with Xianghui Hong asks, what is the difference between quant researcher and quant trader regarding daily job responsibilities and recruitment requirements? Do any of you have something to say to that? The difference between quant researcher and quant trader?
So like at our company, we do have these two titles. One is quant researcher, one is quant trader. I would think of it like as a spectrum. Like if you are more at quant researcher end, you will focusing on more on the model perspective, like you will be involved more in terms of understanding the model for pricing and the model for market making, versus if you are on the quant trader end, you will be more in charge of observing the market daily, like watching the market daily, calibrating the parameters to make sure that we are fit to the market, and then just involve more on those execution, the actual execution requirements, and also working with communicating with your team members to just execute trades. So I think in short, if you're a quant researcher, you will be focusing on more the model perspective. If you're more a quant trader, you will be more focusing on the executing trade and then watching the market. You will gain more intuition about the market. Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Does anybody else have anything to add to that? No, okay, if not.
I would say that how close you are to the money. So quant trader, you eat what you kill. You're very close to money. So on the trading floor, that trader pretty much rules. You can think of a quant researcher as part of the team that supports a quant trader who's actually responsible for their P&L. Then quant trader, ideally, they have their own set of quantitative skills, but at the end of the day, they're running their book. And quant researcher essentially playing support to a quant trader, then depends on whatever the support entails. Could be model testing, could be idea generation, could be risk control, et cetera, essentially that's kind of the division of labor, just merely by name. One can easily switch different names, use it differently in different organizations, but if you essentially drill in on the word trader, essentially trader entails that you're responsible for your P&L, while the researchers are responsible for research itself, researcher does not have P&L.
Also, it depends on the firm. I mean, some firms, like some people are asking about Citadel, right? I mean, for Citadel and Citadel Securities, I mean, they both have their, quant analyst and also quant researcher and also quant trader. That the P&L is the key, right? Some people, some QR, they focus more on the modeling side. Some more focus on more on the, let's say, trading side, daily monitoring. And but separate by teams. So the title sometimes doesn't matter that much. It's really whether you can take the model and also responsible for your own P&L. And also one key point when Sue was talking about where is your, let's say, capital coming from. For security side, it's more like internal money, and for the fund side, more external money, right? And both sides, I mean, we want to achieve the performance, right? Achieve the outperformance, just making money. But sometimes for the fund side, especially for our fund side, also we need to, let's say, have a lot of marketing, like, you know, efforts. It's not just your quant skill matters. It's also whether your client can give you that money, given your performance, yeah.
That's helpful. And actually, I've got to raise one more audience question at this point. You just mentioned Citadel, and Robert asked a great question. Again, thinking about that spectrum of quant trading to quant research to maybe even more kind of software engineering, Robert asks everybody, Can you discuss the software engineering roles in quant finance? I hear firms like Citadel are acting more like technology companies. I understand they work in tandem with strategy creators and traders to implement the algorithm. So where does software engineering fit in this spectrum that we're discussing?
I could say something brief then that
please.
I think, yeah, so it really depends on what the firm is trying to do. Something like a firm like Citadel, you know, they're more on the cutting edge. So there's not a lot of off-the-shelf solutions for the stuff they're trying to do. So a firm like Citadel, they probably will have more software development functions. You know, they're looking for deployable code that they can roll out themselves. But you know, I'm sure they have a ton of off-the-shelf software that they buy as well, and you know, they'll tailor to their own needs.
Great. Let's kind of finish up this section. We're going to talk about several things, kind of the job functions, the education and tools needed, and then the actual job search. And we'll talk about even how the current news is impacting some of that. But to kind of, at least for this moment, pause on the job functions and breadth, I want to finish up with just kind of a lightning round of some true false questions. So I just want you to all tell me true false, and we'll pause there, and the audience can ask further if they would like. First question, Wansu, we'll start with you and then go to Andy, Trillium, Patrick. True or false? You feel like you knew a substantial amount about the financial industry before your first job in it?
For me personally, yes, because my background is financial math.
Had you had an internship in finance?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Andy, internship or other close knowledge of the industry before your first job?
Internship.
Trillium.
I worked it before. I traded for probably more than 10 years. So I would say that I know a lot to know that I know very little.
well put. Patrick, true or false, you had a close view of the financial industry through an internship or other close experience before your first job?
No, yeah, false. I started out as a floor trader, so I was an econ undergrad and really didn't have a lot. You know, you see big data trends, but as far as what it's like to work day to day, I didn't have much of an idea.
Okay, one more true false to finish this up. Wansu, going to you. True or false, your specific team matters more than the firm for that first job. So if you're comparing between a few jobs, the team matters more than the firm. True or false?
I think that's true.
Andy.
Yeah. Oh, the same question?
Same question. True or false?
Yeah. True.
The team matters more than the firm. True?
Yes.
Trillium.
Sure.
Patrick?
I guess I'd have to say false again.
This is good. Comment on that. Why would you say false?
Well, you know, I guess it depends how your company is structured. My first job was we were working at a limited partnership. So even though the traders had their own book, they were kind of on their own. You know, if you couldn't come together and execute commonly, you know, it's nobody would have a spot to sit. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's move to education and tools for a few minutes. And this is a great panel for this because we have two financial math grads, one stats grad, and one analytics grad. So as we saw in the initial survey, our audience members span all those areas plus social sciences, which I'm a graduate of. So we have economics. So I think we can give some perspective on this. Andy, I want to start with you. What should a stats graduate student consider in preparing for a career in finance?
Right now in the stats program itself, I think Chicago has pretty broader coverage, right? All those modeling side and experimental design side, right? And also some kind of machine learning courses. But the other, let's say, preparation I would suggest the stats program students to take is econ classes, the business school, the Toyota Technology Center, because all these classes give you a very broad range of the skill set covered in the finance, especially for quantum finance. If Chicago Economics Department, Pricing Theory 1-3, right, you have to take it. Mm-hmm. And for the Toyota Technology Center, right, convex optimization, all those
the
kind
Toyota
of...
The Toyota Technology Center, just to state again.
Yeah, Toyota, the TTIC, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the because we don't have the engineering school in UPC, right? We only have the bioengineering right now. So those are kind of, you know, optimization kind of work is pretty important. In business school, lots of the hardcore kind of time series, you know, asset pricing courses are also very, very useful.
And so it sounds like as a stat student, you really sampled around at multiple departments in the coursework?
Yes, yes. So that's why I took 2 years.
Great. Patrick, I'd like to go to you next as our analytics grad. What should an analytics student consider in terms of best ways to tool up and to make the most out of the opportunity?
Yeah, well, first, for one of your electives, I suggest taking the trading class with Yuri. Yuri's got a ton of industry experience. Actually, he worked at Bank of America for a while, so a former colleague of mine. But, one of the great things about the MSCA program is a lot of the finals are project-based, and you can kind of go out and source your own data and, you know, do your own projects. So I'd encourage anyone to use financial data. There's a ton of publicly available economic and financial data, and, you know, just start applying that tool set for that particular class to the financial data.
Great. Let's go to Juan Suen Trillium. You two can take it whichever order you prefer, but I want to talk to you as the FinMath alumni on our panel. What are some things you'd recommend for financial math students to tool up or other students to tool up using, you know, financial math coursework?
So from my perspective, first I would say that the coursework is actually, I think it's important. So especially the two courses from Roger Lee, I feel like those two courses are pretty useful, not only help you to prepare the interviews, but also even after I work, I found sometimes I still need to review lectures from that course. So I would say coursework is still important. First, that will help you to learn something. And also if you have a good GPA, that'll help you to stand out from a bunch of resumes. And other than the coursework, I would suggest to find an internship. And especially, I think, when I was at school, there's a program that we cooperate with a bunch of companies, and then the companies will offer internship to that program. I think this program still exists, so I would encourage students to take advantage of that. I actually find 2 full-time job opportunities just by taking advantage of that program. So I think that's a really important way to help you to find an internship or full-time job opportunities. And also considering doing some interview preparation and take advantage of the career advice office of either this program or UChicago, just to do practice as much as you can. That'll help you to be better prepared and be more confident when you are doing the actual interview. And also, while on that topic, make your resume look good. I think we may have some more topics on that later, but I think try to find out ways to make your resume stand out is a really important way to get you into the interview.
Very helpful, thank you. Trillium, any comments?
For me, you start with curiosity. So I don't know you, I don't know anyone. So I don't know what's your end goal, or what's your desirable outcome. So I would say, be curious, will be the fundamental property that you need to have. Then really start from the end by asking a question of what's your desirable outcome? What do you want to do? So what's in line with your passion? then you can make a living, and then you can be really good at it. So those are the three criteria. Ideally, you find something that that's the overlap of all them all. If you don't have enough of input to answer those questions, then that's why you are in this conference, right? By talking to as many people as you can, by grabbing opportunities like internships, as many as you can, just to collect information so you can know what you want. And if that all falls, then follow your curiosity. Like in your ideal world, starting from the end, what do you want to build that you think is valuable of your time? Then roll up your sleeve and try to build something. Try to build something and show it to people and to see that where it leads you. Assuming that you have the end goal in mind, you know what you want to do, then by being curious, then you pretty much will know what classes or what white paper you're going to read. So I want to give the kind of a principles out because that will help you fish, cook into the future, you know, instead of asking for a precise recipe. Is all of us are different. So I would say start with the bottom line, start with the end. Try to spend time to identify that what is that you want to do. If you don't have input, they'll get input. Then based on that, then sample through the classes you think that makes sense that will contribute to that angle. And then that angle might change while you are sampling through all those classes. But bear this in mind. Everything that you prepare in school will not be sufficient. So your very first job after 2 to 3 years will pretty much give you the expertise for you to take the second job. And the opportunity itself is going to present as you navigate in real life. So whatever you can do today is essentially an initial attempt to steer your ship. But your ship is going to continue follow the wave as you go through life. So don't try to force anything, and there's no such thing as a 10-year, 20-year plan that you can definitely hit it. It's good to have a plan, but be open-minded enough to kind of go with the trend. That's why being curious is kind of a constant.
Very helpful. Thank you. So we have attendees in the audience who, you know, some are not coming from financial math or stats or analytics. They might have had a little bit less of a quantitatively focused master's degree. Anonymous asks how people from social related degrees can improve their chance to get a quant trader job, for instance. We had another question asking about how valuable an economics background is in roles like yours. I want to ask you all, if one is coming from, now economics certainly is very quantitative, but let's say you're coming from less of a quantitative background, less opportunity to have worked on programming and statistics and financial modeling. Do you have kind of two courses you would recommend as absolute starting points for somebody that has the interest, ambition, and capability to go into quant finance, but maybe hasn't had more than kind of undergraduate math and statistics? If you had to give two courses, let's just hear kind of your very brief response to that. Wansu, do you want to start? Two courses that you would advise to somebody who has not taken graduate level math, stats, programming?
The first course is Python. I think if you learn some Python, that'll be really helpful. That's a universal skill applied to almost all quantitative trader or researcher jobs. And the second one, it really depends on like which field you're more interested in. For example, if you are interested in options, I would suggest you take option pricing course. But if you're just in general interested in a quantitative finance, I can't think of a course that teach that.
Then how would you, actually, we'll come back to that in the next section. I want to ask more ways to build finance knowledge outside of the classroom, but let's come back to that point. Andy, one, two courses that you would say for anybody without kind of a lot of grad stats and math, where they should start?
Yeah, so first I need to understand that everyone know, you don't have to get a kind of a quantitative background in order to start a quantitative career, especially on the trading side. The insights is more important, especially on the trading side. So I have a couple of friends in the chemistry department. They just went to become an option trader, and also the model they use is quite simple, linear regression, right? So in terms of the course, so let's say in stats department, 246, I think, is the pattern recognition class offered by Yali Amit. So that class is going to give you a kind of introduction level about statistical learning and also kind of data science. So very easy, like an entry-level class, but going to open the door to a lot of deeper kind of research. Yeah, so that's a good one.
Okay, great. Patrick, any specific recommendation?
Yeah, I'd agree with Andy. You do not need a especially quantitative background to get into trading itself. You do need stats. That's the first class I would take. You know, statistical terms come up a lot. You know, you need to know what kurtosis is. You need to know, you know, fat tail distributions, you know, leptokurtic. You know, you kind of need that terminology to even have the conversation with people and understand how financial data gets communicated. Other than that, it's kind of what Wansu said. It's kind of up to you what area you want to go into. You know, if you want to be a trader, there's really nothing that teaches you how to trade. Exactly. You know, it's you really got to get that experience. So I guess second class, you know, Python's great, you know, or really any coding language that you can build models in, you know, whatever the target firm you're going for uses, I'd go for that.
Okay, thanks. Trillium, anything to add there?
So essentially the end goal of taking additional classes because you're in a different department is to show commitment and capability. So you're not gonna get sufficient skill set. Essentially you are signaling to the outside world of future employers, hey, give me a chance. I'm committed and I'm capable. So in that fashion, if you give me two classes, then get one in hardcore programming. Take one, C++, Python, whichever. It shows that you can handle it and you're committed. Second class in quant finance. So it depends on where you go. You can pick one in risk, pick one in option pricing, can pick one in econometrics, depends on where you're going. Predictive analysis or risk or pricing, make your pick. Essentially, both classes shows that I'm committed and I have the mental capacity to handle it. But more importantly is, since you didn't start off with a finance related major, then the better way to actually convince anyone is to find an insider to actually vouch for you. So if you are a hiring manager, you are taking a risk by hiring anyone up front. So it might look stupid, and if you vouch, make a hiring decision, and you look real, and that person turned out to be bad, and you look pretty bad in front of your own boss. So a good way to reduce that risk, upfront risk, of when any hiring managers give you a shot, especially when you come from a different background, is work for free. Take an internship and do some free projects. Use your real deliverable to demonstrate that. Not only that I made a commitment in school, but I can really deliver. Once you have 3 months in with that person, and that person is really happy with your work, then all the resume goes out a window. That's it.
Very useful, thanks. With that, let's pause there on kind of tools and education. We might have a chance to come back to some of that. And let's talk a bit more about the job search. So there's a few elements that, based on the audience questions and what I think we should cover, a little bit on how you would search for a job, particularly in this environment with coronavirus uncertainty and such. We're also going to talk a little bit about how to specifically prepare for interviews. So let's start with what's on a lot of people's minds and has been upvoted quite a bit in our Q&A. In this environment with very volatile financial markets, coronavirus uncertainty, and all the rest, what do you think the outlook is for jobs in the financial industry? And if you were searching right now, is there a certain area of the industry that you'd be searching, or a certain strategy you would be using to try to get better traction? Who would like to start with that?
I can go first. I mean, technically right now, so for our firm and also lots of the asset manager side, the hiring has been stopped. I mean, especially for the next maybe 1 or 2 quarters. But I do see for the trading side, I mean, they are going to get more opportunities, right? And the more volatile the market is, and the more profit they are making. And for the asset manager side, because lots of the revenue coming from the fee, and when market is down, I mean, we don't have that much budget to expand the headcount. However, the next year, or let's say in Q3, Q4, there will be more and more kind of new hires. Yeah.
Great. Any comments on, you know, which routes you think would be most efficient to be searching right now? Still mostly about trying to network with others on LinkedIn or just the websites of the various firms. Anything beyond the obvious that any of you would comment on of how to find those jobs at moments like this?
I will start by saying that it's called going with the trend. Acknowledge the fact that we are experiencing economic contraction. So this is not a time to think of growth. And if you talk to 100 firms, and most of them will tell you that they probably have some kind of a hiring freeze. It is the reality, then face it. And then I quote from I Ching, the Book of Change, an ancient Chinese book. Essentially, this is a period that when the trend is against you, you learn to, the primary goal of this period will be preservation, laying down the foundation, strengthening your fundamentals. So what that means in this case is, yes, you go back to the fundamentals to build up your skills and to learn the programming, learn the math, and you reach out to people. Ideally, this is a time that instead of seeking out for job offers, rather seek out for advice and to build a relationship. So the more conversations you have, the better. And like I mentioned, if you can get, right now, since everybody's kind of tight on their budget, then with your skill sets, maybe you can offer free help that present your value. And this is a time and place to do so. And offer yourself up for any kind of work that interests you, and offer to do it for free, and then over deliver, and you build a relation, because this period of contraction will pass. We know that it's a matter of time. So take the time to build it instead of rushing into something with unrealistic expectation of you can get lucky. I never rule out the possibility of that. It's just that if you want to make a realistic projection based on base rate right now, it is our economy is going through a contraction. So you need to have a strategy that's in line with that.
That's great advice. Thanks. Oh, Wansu, go ahead, please.
I would still encourage students to just try out using your just usual method to go to a company's website or LinkedIn, or sometimes even if you don't see they are hiring at company's website, if you see the HR email at their website, just send to the HR email directly, because sometimes they may still have opportunities that doesn't list out in the website. So I think it still doesn't hard to try. And also I know even if the environment is like that, some people are still hiring. So I would still encourage people to try even at this environment. And I think this is a short-term thing.
Great, thank you. Yeah, speaking on behalf of at least our financial math career development office, I think they would strongly urge everybody, you know, use the tried and true methods definitely before giving up or doing anything along with outside the box things, because there certainly are still many postings and the usual processes. But that was very helpful. Thanks. Let's talk for a few minutes about interviews and the actual hiring process. So we have a question from Patrick, which focuses on interviews that are not the boilerplate technical interviews. I think we've seen the industry using more open-ended interview questions, case studies, coding tests. Patrick asks about those open-ended interviews and says, from your experience, either as somebody being interviewed or when you interview others, what are some of the kind of open-ended questions that you ask at the beginning of an interview to gauge how a candidate thinks about data and about being a quant? Do you have any, you know, favorite questions that, that our audience members could benefit from, or questions that you've been asked that are somewhat open-ended? I think those cause the most anxiety sometimes for people at the interviewing stage. Any comments?
Yeah, I'd say probably the most common interview question is, tell me about yourself. So definitely have that, you know, elevator speech hammered out, you know what you want to talk about, you know, have that prepared coming in. You know, there's some common financial interview questions you can prepare for as well. You know, one of the open-ended ones I like to ask is, you know, tell me about a project you've worked on, or, you know, tell me about some people you've worked with, or, you know, just to get a sense for, you know, how you collaborate, you know, how you view business problems. And I would also say, you know, don't get too bogged down in, you know, any particular issue or story. I mean, what the interviewer is trying to figure out is how you think, how you see problems. You know, it's often less about the results themselves than kind of how you get there. So it's the journey for sure.
Great, thank you. I want to make sure we leave a little time for other questions. We're trying to get to most of the questions as we go, just to be clear. So audience members, keep punching those in. Let me ask kind of another lightning round of some brief answers, one sentence or less on a few of these questions. And I'd like to hear from anyone who would like to answer on these. First, what's the best resource for technical interview preparation? Do you have a favorite book, favorite website, favorite, you know, process? Let's start with Wansu. Do you have a preferred or recommended technical prep resource?
Yeah, I think there are a few books on those technical interview, like those brain teasers, one with the green cover. I can't remember the exact name of that book, but I'm sure if you search online, you're going to find it.
Yeah, it's the most popular book. So you're saying, number one, don't skip the obvious solution, those very popular technical interview prep books. Fair
yeah,
point.
I think those books are pretty helpful.
Cracking the Code, I'm seeing in the chat box, might be the title. I think there's a few others as well that we're referring to.
Yeah, I think we're referring to something else, but
yeah. I know the one you're talking about. Maybe somebody can type that in the chat box. Okay, so beyond the kind of the key books that are out there for prep questions, any other technical prep resource or advice that you would give, Patrick? Anything come to mind for you? Could be advice on how to handle the interview, or a resource you think people should definitely check out?
Yeah, I think there, the financial products are, you know, there's a lot of information out there on, you know, how they're priced. You know, I've gotten questions about, you know, very kind of esoteric securities, and you know, very few people will know necessarily how to price them or model them. So again, I think it's more about kind of how you tackle the problem. I haven't been one much for books. You know, I kind of have always just, you know, you look at Investopedia or, you know, any number of financial blogs online. I like to see how traders think, and, you know, kind of have that perspective coming in.
Actually, that raises kind of the next question, which we had brushed up against earlier, which is, outside of quantitative tools, how do you build more knowledge about just the markets themselves? Usually in the interview process, there's kind of a portion that really just gets at the markets, and at least my own work with students, that can be one of the more stressful parts, is how do we learn more about markets? Is there a good, you know, newspaper, website, blog, podcast, if you could all give a recommendation on just how to build kind of general markets knowledge? And before you answer, just want to mention that we have the Green Book that we all refer to lovingly as the Green Book, is a practical guide to quantitative finance interviews by Xinfeng Zhao or Zhu, but it will be kind of the top hit on practical guide to quantitative finance interviews. With that, please, I'd love to hear everybody's brief answer on what's a way to just build market knowledge. Imagine you're in a graduate program, you're not seeing the markets at all, you're doing all the quant prep. How do you just learn more about what the markets are? Not a course, but just beyond that. Andy, any thoughts?
Yeah, so a couple of things. First is the conference. I mean, let's say industry may have a conference, right? One of my stats program alumni, he joined the All-In Finance Conference. You guys may heard about that, was hosted every year, and then they canceled this year. Lots of the industry people go to talk. It's a kind of 2-day event, and people go to present all the work from academic and from industry, right? And it's a good chance to know what people are working on, right? And also it's a good networking kind of event. And there are many other, let's say, industry level kind of conferences. That's a good opportunity. And another thing, advice for the career search is, go when you guys check out the LinkedIn profile for your for the team you're looking at or for the company you look at, pay attention to the detailed description of their jobs. Some people put very detailed kind of tasks or, let's say, accomplishments, right? And put yourself in the position of his mind to imagine if you can solve those problems, to imagine if you do it, how are you going to do it? And then if you find any kind of things, okay, I don't know how to do it, it's a good opportunity for you to connect with the people and then to ask the exact detailed question. Because everyone has similar technical background. It's just, you know, maybe a little bit different implementation methods. And is that difference going to make the huge difference in the career? Because you are going to ask the right question.
Mm-hmm. Great. And audience members, keep those questions coming. We're going to keep trying to get through as many as we can. Zooming back out a bit to kind of the job overall and what you view of it, I would love to hear, as Jose asks, what are the key skills for your job? Math, coding, communication. We could throw stats in there, but if you were, what's kind of the underappreciated or maybe a better, as Jose says, what are the key skills? What are maybe the ones people should focus on that might not be obvious? We know it uses math and stats and programming. The marginal interview candidate, is it that they need even more math, more programming, more stats, better communication? What would you answer to that?
I think communication is pretty important. And also going back to the question you asked before a little bit in terms of what advice that we can give to people when they're doing technical interview, just want people to be aware that it's totally okay that you don't know the answer to a question. Because even if you know the answer to a question, like the interviewers may keep you asking harder and harder questions until you get a point that you don't know the answer, which is totally fine. But as long as during the process, you're not panicking, instead of just sitting there being quiet, instead of doing that, if you can just try to talk to the interviewer what your thought process are, I think that will be even more important to help the interviewer understand how you think of problem. Because during the interview, the interviewer is trying to assess what it'll look like if he works with you in a working environment. So it's totally expected that you don't know the answer to all questions, but communication is the key. Like if you're just keeping up, talking through what your thinking are and asking for a hint even, that'll help.
Great, thank you. We want those audience questions to keep coming in. I wanna hit a few of those audience questions through a little thing we call overhyped or true. I want you to each give me a very quick answer or, you know, brief answer on whether this statement is overhyped, it's too exaggerated, or whether it's true. One, finance working in the industry requires extreme hours versus similar roles in other fields.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. So maybe there's some truth to that. The hours are extreme. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, I guess it depends what you think extreme is. You know,
say compared to data analyst at an online retail firm. So sign, you know, STEM, quant kind of job, but not in finance, maybe data, other data science.
Yeah, I think it's a little, it's fairly true. You know, it really depends on the role again, but I mean, for us anyway, we will get ramp ups of time, you know, around quarter end or, you know, just for any kind of large reporting cycles. So, you know, maybe you'll have to put in more hours those weeks, but yeah, it's probably, I do find myself working longer than most of my friends. So
thank you. Let me ask this next question, overhyped or true. C++ is an important programming language to know. So we hear about Python. I think we could take for granted that that's the number one language that candidates are asked about. But if you were going to know one thing beyond Python, we hear a lot about R, we hear a lot about other languages, but there's a feeling that C++ is very important for the interview stage. How would you advise candidates, if you're going to know Python and one other thing, would it be R, C++, what would it be?
Probably C++, but I would think as long as you know Python well, then you'll probably be fine for your interview.
Trillium, any comment on that, of particular programming tools that should be very highly rated beyond Python?
I think in your lifetime, they're going to pick up three or four languages anyway.
But let's say for that first job, in the first job interview.
Yeah, in the category of OOP, object-oriented programming, Python, C++ is sufficient. If you need to spend some time to expand that horizon, then pick up a kind of a commonly used software package, and then R, MATLAB will prove that you have both skills.
Okay. Yep. Next question, overhyped or true? We have seen the death of discretionary trading. For instance, we had an audience question once of whether at CTC do all the traders, are they just complete quants, or is there still a lot of you know, high touch trading that depends on more kind of intuitive feel of the markets? But I would broaden that question to everybody. Is discretionary trading going to be a viable growth area, or are you guys at your, you know, prop trading firms, banks, other firms just seeing that go completely to systematic trading?
I don't think it'll go completely to systematic trading. I think the trend is probably more like a gray box instead of completely black box. Like, also see some questions about machine learning, like how it applies to financial industry. I feel like because in financial industry, the noise to signal ratio is so high. Like, there's so many noise in this area. It's like, if you don't really understand, well, even if you understand what this algorithm is doing, it's really easy to overfit. And sometimes it still will be helpful to have a human together with that machine to like implement this model or algorithm together. So I would think that human plus machine is better than just machine itself or just human itself. So I think the trend will be a gray box that composite both human intuition and the algorithm. So I don't think the discretionary trading is dead, but I would think the trend is more like the combination of both human and machine.
I really like that analogy of the gray box instead of, you know, the black box where it's just complete machine learning or something, or white box with completely discretionary. That's a great, great take. I want to broaden that to everybody. That was my next question. Overhyped or true, machine learning is taking over finance. Could others comment on machine learning? And we had audience questions about how you particularly use machine learning. If you don't use machine learning, I'd love to hear that too. And we all can recognize machine learning is a very broad term that refers to a wide set of tools. So in your answer, touch on what tools do you use in machine learning, if any, or is this, you know, and to what degree should our audience members be focused on that right now? Andy, Trillium, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, for machine learning, I'd say it has a lot of application, I mean, in finance, especially for the, let's say, quantitative finance, right? But going back to the depth of the discretionary trading or, let's say, fundamental research or fundamental analyst, I mean, they are never going to go away, for especially for fundamental and equity research, because if, let's say, machine can fully replace human, then that's not the day, I mean, fundamental analyst will be gone, right? But there are lots of insights, for example, for today's, like, event, right, market drawdown. I mean, this event will never be in the model, any model itself. I mean, you can put some of the jump or any kind of uncertainty, let's say, into the model, but you are not going to forecast this one, right? And for the machine learning techniques itself, it depends on the application area. Some of the price on the macro level, it can be predict relatively stable with certain bands of the confidence interval. But on the individual stock level or those exotic option part, it's going to fully replicate the kind of other insights, right? And for the pricing tool, I mean, machine learning can be more helpful. And yeah, it really depends on the area, yeah.
Trillium or Patrick, anything to add to the machine learning or discretionary versus systematic discussion?
For me, we use machine learning techniques to measure confidence level and the intent. Essentially, we build platform for private capital raising. The fragmentation in the space is how do we match investors with the offer they are more likely to invest at any given time. And the fragmentation is caused mostly by a lack of information, opaque asymmetric information distribution. So being able to actually, especially human behaviors in general are messy, relatively uncertain. Investors can say that I'm interested, but they don't do anything. And that's the biggest pain points that I experienced by private capital fundraisers. So as a value add that we say, okay, by following the principle of action speaks louder than words, if I can collect all the information on their clicks, eyeballs, views, which page they look at, I can concretely measure their intent and the interest level. That's one example of how we use it, and there are some many variations to it. That's why, in general, it depends on what you want to accomplish. So machine learning itself is once again a tool, and leveraging the power of computing power, meaning that a computer can crunch data very fast and run algorithms very fast. And then based on the modern kind of research, behavioral science, behavioral finance, and et cetera, then we can summarize everything, build everything into a mathematical representation, AKA a model, that can be understood and implemented faithfully by machine. That's kind of the promise. That as to how much you can accomplish with that, comes down to your imagination and what is the problem at hand. So it's not a panacea for sure, but for the people who know, then you can pick the right problem for this tool.
Thank you. Patrick, anything to add to machine learning and systematic trading?
Yeah, I agree with everything that everyone just said. You know, I think it's another tool in your toolbox. It's an important tool. It's getting a lot of attention right now since it's relatively new, but it's not a panacea. You know, it's exciting. You know, I think there's going to be some good applications going forward. So, stay tuned.
Thank you. We had a question from Kunyu. Can you give an example of keeping, you know, the human element in when you apply machine learning to your work? I think your comments. Everybody have answered that well, this idea that it's not enough to get out of sample fit. You've got to really make sure, is there kind of economic and financial rationale behind the results you're seeing and understanding the model a little bit more deeply. We are coming right up to time, and there's a question here, Wansu, I'd love for you to repeat. Zini asks that you, Wansu, mentioned a program that was really helpful in finding your internships and full-time positions. You had mentioned it had helped you find two. and was just hoping you could repeat that of what that program was one more time.
Oh, it's just a program that in the financial math master program, like in that master program, I can't remember the name, but there's I remember. It's called Project Lab, where a lot of companies coordinate with this financial math program, and they offer opportunities for students to spend a quarter to do a project for that company, and that will count as an internship for that company. And then,
go ahead.
Yeah, through that internship, you allow the companies to know you, and then after that, it's likely that they will offer you full-time opportunities.
So let's say for financial math students, Project Lab is highly recommended. For those that are not in financial math, Project Lab is that same recommendation you got from other panelists, including Trillium and I think Patrick and Andy, to find ways to apply your skills, even if it's for informal internships, even if it's for a friend in the industry, doesn't have to be something very formal.
Yeah,
okay,
totally.
With that, we are right up to time. So I'd like to thank again our panelists for bringing all of their experience and perspective to us, especially as they're so busy at this time. And I will kick it back to and thank all of you who have attended. Danny, would you like to make any concluding remarks? I'll give him one.
Thank you, Mark. So with that, we will go ahead and conclude our panel. Thank you everyone for attending. Please remember that this panel has been recorded and the link will be provided for you in an email later on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.